Discovering stories of people living out their beliefs in our culture, communities, and the public square. And finding courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
On our path of life, each of us encounters moments where things happen we just can't explain with ease, leading to stories that are almost too weird to believe. But for most of us, life in between those stories is relatively predictable. Today we go on the road with a man who has seemingly navigated from one unexpected happening, like being part of a police sting in the hotel he managed, to another, such as a car suddenly crashing into his home. The sheer number of stories this man has accumulated has led him to pen a book he's appropriately titled, What Are the Odds? And as we take a look at his journey, we find that this man's faith in God has only been strengthened by what he's experienced. So it is a distinct pleasure today to welcome alongside Rich Branham. Sir, the warmest of greetings. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
And I must say, I mean, I see you every day. We work literally right across the hallway from each other.
Yes, yes.
But I usually call you Rich. Now that you're an author, I feel this push to call you Richard or Sir Richard or Your Excellence. What should I call you?
Mr. Branham. No, no, Rich is just fine.
Okay, perfect. Now, reading through the book, a person can easily lose sight of this, but for all intents and purposes, you are a regular guy. You're a regular human being.
I'm just a normal guy, yes. with a few odd stories.
Well, when you read those, the accumulation of the odd stories, you can almost get the sense that you're some type of secret agent or someone out there seeking these type of experiences, but that's not true.
No, they find me.
You open the book with a story that I find kind of sets the stage for the rest of what people will experience along with you in What Are the Odds? And that's you working at a hotel as a clerk just after high school when you inadvertently become a central figure in a sting by U.S. Marshals. What happened there?
I was working at a hotel in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. The day before, there had been a murder at a bank robbery down in Iowa. Unbeknownst to me, I had checked in one of the two perpetrators of the murder and bank robbery down in Iowa. I was called by my supervisor the next morning and asked if I remembered checking a particular gentleman in, and I had, and so they called me up to work because they wanted to talk to me about that. I got up to work a little bit early and was greeted by the U.S. Marshals Service, who then talked to me for a couple hours about him, his demeanor, what he was like, where he was, those types of things. And then the U.S. Marshals Service wanted me to contact him and try to get him to come back to the front desk.
Oh, my word. So they set this plan in place, and yes, you were going to be instrumental in this plan by what you were supposed to call him, right?
Right. This was before GPSs. This was before cell phones and pagers and all those types of things. And the only contact they had with him was knowing that I had put him in a certain room. So they wanted me to call him and invite him back to the front desk.
How long did you have, by the way, between finding this plan out and actually?
I got up to the hotel about 11, and I had to call him at 3 o'clock. So there were a couple hours of training and talking and going through the process.
What are you thinking about as 0 hour approaches and you begin to make that call?
It was slightly nerve-wracking. Slightly. But there was a U.S. Marshal that was at the front desk next to me that was acting as a front desk clerk. There was another couple in the lobby that were acting like they were checking in. They were both U.S. Marshals. So there were a number of U.S. Marshals. They had cleared the lobby except for me and the other U.S. Marshals that were there.
It sounds like an episode of some kind of USA crime drama.
It was fairly exciting.
So then what happened? It's time you pick the phone up, you dial the number. What takes place?
Well, before I dialed the number, I was living obviously at home. I was just out of high school. And my mom and dad always enjoyed the hotel stories, so I thought I'd call my mom and just let her know that I was about to be part of this major scene with the U.S. Marshals Service. And I said goodbye to her, actually, which she didn't appreciate.
She didn't take that particularly well.
So I called down to his room, and the phone rang 8 times, and he didn't pick up. And so they had me hang up and call down again, and it rang 8 more times, and he did not pick up again. So they waited a couple of minutes, and then they converged on his room, and as it turns out, he had left about 15 or 20 minutes before they had gotten to the hotel early in the morning.
Oh, man.
They were just right behind him and eventually caught him 2 days later and arrested him, and he's serving jail time for the rest of his life now.
And that sounds like just about the most remarkable thing that would happen in a person's life, and that's only the first of numerous stories that we have here in these notes. Let's move on to the next one with Rick Branham here as we're talking about his book, What Are the Odds on the Road for Faith Radio? And I'm Ryan Thomas. A lot of your tales revolve around your work in the hospitality industry, which sounds like a really interesting place to work, by the way. And in the book, this one was only a couple sentences worth of an explanation, but I found it especially intriguing. You gave your hotel's night auditor a review she wasn't pleased with, and she proceeded to lay down in the parking lot in protest. Could you expand on what took place there?
Being a manager of multiple hotel properties through my career, had a chance to offer up a lot of reviews for employees. She decided that she didn't like the review and decided to take it out on me by grabbing all of her purse and all of her paperwork, running out into the parking lot and laying down, blocking traffic, blocking the taxis, the vans, people coming to and from the hotel.
So what became of her? Is she there to this day?
Or she's not. She indicated that she was going to hurt others or herself and had her hand in her purse. So we ended up having to call the police. And after a long negotiating period, they eventually got her to release the purse, let go, and took her to jail, actually.
And this is another intriguing facet that is interwoven, if that's a word, in your tale, which is you calling the police. You had a funny comment that I believe it was your wife or your daughter made about you calling the police, and it was basically that they know you so well that how did it go?
Yes, my daughter suggested that when I call 911, they ask, "Hey, Rich, what's going on?" Because I've come across enough instances in my life where I've had to call 911.
Do you even remember how many times it's been at this point?
It's dozens of times.
Yeah. Let's talk about the visit to Washington, D.C. You were at a hospitality industry conference, and you were headed back after some good food with friends when your taxi suddenly became a getaway car. Can you paint that surprising picture?
Yes, this was a very interesting evening. It started about 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night with a woman jumping in our taxi. There were three of us in the back seat and the driver and a friend of mine, Ricardo, in the front seat, and she jumped in the front seat. His door was unlocked, and she jumped in his lap in the front seat. That was 10:30, 11 at night, and the whole process lasted till about 5 in the morning, so it was a 6 or 7 hour ordeal for us.
Oh, man.
The bottom line was that she told us she was being threatened by somebody, and she screamed, "He's got a gun." And, of course, we didn't know what she was talking about. When I turned around and looked, there was a gentleman in the middle of the street about 4 or 5 car lengths behind us that was running towards the taxi, pointing a gun at us as if he was going to shoot at us.
What does that feel like, by the way? I've never had a gun pointed at me in anger. What's the feeling you get?
Have you had a gun pointed at you not in anger?
Actually, probably, but that's another story.
It was very nerve-wracking, and I said to the driver, "Let's go. He's got a gun. Let's go." And he was more concerned about a red light that he didn't want to drive through than the guy chasing us with a gun. So after a little prompting, he understood exactly what the situation was, and we got going. Yeah.
So you get going, and how does this play out then? Are you pursued, or is it easy to get away? And then how does this whole thing summarize?
Yeah, we went up one block, and the taxi driver stopped at the next red light. And it was in Washington, D.C., and so the blocks are very short.
Oh.
And it didn't resolve anything. We turned around. The guy was still chasing after us.
Boy.
And so we told him to go again. And so I called 911, of course. And the 911 operator directed us to a small precinct that was a couple miles away. So we drove to that precinct, dropped the woman off, and then the officers wanted to interview all of us about what was going on. And that's where the evening got a little crazy, and I documented in detail in the book, but it ended up me having to go back to the scene of the crime, ended up having to ID someone, and it got a little crazy for me, yes.
And in the end, we don't want to give away the endings of the book here. This is just a sampling of the amazing things that take place in What Are the Odds, and we've got Rich Branham here with us on the road. I'm Ryan Thomas here for My Faith Radio with a remarkable series of stories about a man who finds himself in situations where really the appropriate things to say are, what are the odds that this would take place to Mr. Branham? But eventually you discovered that basically not all things were as they seemed in that situation, right?
Right. She came off as the victim, and we thought she was the victim. The police thought she was the victim. And as it turns out, she was the perpetrator of the crime.
Oh, man.
And again, I detailed in the book, but as it turns out, she was the aggressor, even though the other gentleman had the gun and was chasing us. It's very convoluted. It was very interesting, yes.
Understood. Well, on another trek on behalf of a hotel employer in the mid-90s, you happened to get hooked up with a free ticket to a NASCAR race. And that led to you being in a surprising location at the open of the race itself. Could you paint the picture of how that developed?
Yes, I was not a NASCAR fan originally, and my brother was working with NASCAR at the time with his company and gave me tickets to get in. And as it turns out, it was a lanyard with a whole bunch of tickets on it, and I didn't know any different because I'd never been to a NASCAR race
Can
before.
I just say, by the way, that your explanation of that lanyard in the book was one of my absolute favorite parts of the book. You describe yourself as looking down at the thing and being like, hey, this isn't one ticket. It's a layer of tickets.
I had a layer of tickets, and it was just for me. It was awesome, but I had no idea what I was doing. So I walked through the race, and walked into the race and into the track, and then underneath the track, all the tracks, you drive underneath them so the trucks and cars can get in. And
okay.
I just kept going, and security kept pushing me on and pushing me on, and eventually I realized that it was a pit pass to be in the pits during the race.
Oh, man.
These days they don't allow very many public people, just general admission people, in because of 9/11 and things that happened. This was pre-9/11.
Oh, security issues, I suppose.
Yeah. So I was down there watching the race, and I love the pomp and circumstance of NASCAR races. And so there was the national anthem and the prayer and the flyover, and it was just really cool. And the gentlemen start your engines, and the car started up, and right when they went to pull out, I looked to my right. I was down on pit row, and I looked to my right, and the cars were starting to pull out. And right when they hit the gas to pull out, a gentleman was standing behind me, bigger than me, and grabbed me in the middle of my back and pulled me over the half wall that divides the track between where the people stand and the track. I realized when the race started that I was actually standing on pit row. So even though I was new to NASCAR, I should have known a little bit better than to be standing on the physical track when the race started. So fortunately, he was right there, pulled me over. The cars went zooming by, and you know, I'm here to live to tell about it.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I also like what you said in the book about how you now watch NASCAR races, especially at the beginning yes. of the race, to make sure nobody else is actually
it's been,
on the road.
Been 15 years or whatever now, and I've yet to see anyone on the track when the race is going, except for the drivers when they get in an accident or something. Yes.
Now, not all of the tales in the book happen while you're on duty in some capacity. You were peacefully about to exit your own home after lunch, when you say that, and this is just several years ago, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When you say that saying the words, I love you, ended up saving your life. How was that
yes.
the case?
I was visiting with my daughter, who was down from St. Cloud, and her soon-to-be husband, and had stopped by over the lunch hour to visit with them and say hi. And when I went to leave, we were in a split-level house at the time, and when I went to leave, I looked up and put my hand on the door handle and looked up the steps and said, I love you guys. And they were talking at the time, and the radio was on, and they didn't hear me. And my daughter said, what'd you say, Daddy? I said, I love you. And she said, I love you too, Daddy. And right then, the front of the house exploded.
Oh, man.
So I opened up the garage door just a little bit, and I could see the light of day instead of seeing the garage that was attached at the time. It was gone. And as it turns out, a woman that was at the top of incline in our street had passed out, and instead of her foot slipping off the brake or off the gas or just stalling out, her foot pressed down on the gas, and she went through a couple of yards and through our garage at about somewhere between, the police said, between 60 and 70 miles an hour, and plowed right through the side of our garage. So I didn't know it at the time, so we put the dogs away, and I ran outside, and The truck was up against our neighbor's garage with the wheels still spinning and the high pitch of the sound, and she was passed out. And
the significance of that being, if I understood it correctly, she still had her foot completely on the gas pedal, right?
Right. So she was a front end front wheel drive, so the wheels were spinning and dirt was spitting up, hitting back at her house.
Man.
And a 2x4 from our garage had gone right through her window. If she had been sitting 6 inches to the right, it would have decapitated her. She just missed literally losing her head. Called 911 and told them what was going on. And in just a couple of seconds, we heard the sirens, and there were police and fire and ambulance and three news crews from the local TV stations. And it was a crazy afternoon.
I want to ask you, and we're talking with Rich Branham, author of What Are the Odds as We Go On the Road for Faith Radio. And I'm Ryan Thomas, but I want to ask you about faith more deeply when we tell a few more of these stories. But you actually had an opportunity that came as a part of that to be on television and to get the word out about some of the ministries you were involved with at the time. But tell us a little bit about the witnessing opportunities and the opportunity to talk about faith that stemmed from that.
Yeah, I'd specifically mentioned it just a couple of days earlier. There was a tornado in Hugo, Minnesota, and a couple of people had lost their lives. And the news crew was talking to us ahead of time when they were going to be telling us about when they were going to be interviewing us and trying to pump us up and talk about how dramatic it was. And it was dramatic enough on its own without having to even say anything.
Right.
And when they turned the cameras on, I made mention that with the fatalities that had happened in Hugo a couple of days ago, it was just a garage. It was just our stuff, and that we could replace that. And it really, no one was hurt and everything was fine. The issue was for us, for me personally, was if my daughter hadn't said, "What did you say?" giving me a chance to say "I love you" to her again, I would have been standing in the middle of the garage with the garage door down, and that car going through 60 or 70 miles an hour through our garage would have wiped me out and would have killed me for sure. I would not be sitting here right now if she hadn't said "What."
What does that do to you when you have a situation like that? And there's more yet, but you have a situation where you know that if something had gone just a little bit differently than the way it went, that you would have lost your life. What does that do to you, especially as a person of faith, to know that?
It really doesn't bother me. My whole life, I've always just felt like I'm being taken care of. There aren't really any issues. Nothing really makes me nervous or scared, or I get involved in these odd situations, and I just think everything's going to be fine. Even if it's not fine, even if it's not going to be fine, ultimately it's going to be fine.
That's right. That is well said, sir.
Thank you.
And it's very comforting to have you around, especially now knowing that. Not that it wasn't before.
Thank you.
But even
Thank
more
you.
So now.
Thank you.
All right. Well, a number of these experiences have taken place on the roadway.
Yeah.
And another remarkable scene has you waiting your turn for the light to change green so you can merge onto a major interstate, when instead something unexpected literally falls out of the sky next to you.
I was turning left onto the freeway a couple of years ago, and unbeknownst to me, out of nowhere, a truck literally just fell out of the sky. Headlights first, landed right next to me. And so I called 911, pulled over, and went over to the guy, and he kind of half fell out of his truck, and he had his seatbelt on, and so we popped his seatbelt off, and he half fell out, and he said, "What happened?"
And he asked you.
He asked me what happened, and I said, "That's what I was going to ask you." And, long story short, somehow on the bridge that I was sitting under, there was a little patch of ice. It was in the fall, and there had been some black ice up there.
Okay.
And somehow his tire popped the curb. He got a little sideways. It popped the curb. And instead of just hitting the bridge and hitting other cars and kind of bumping around up on the bridge, he went over the top of the bridge perfectly so that he sailed over the top and landed straight down on his nose. So if he had been just a couple of feet to the right instead of where he landed, he literally would have landed right on top of me, and we wouldn't be sitting here right now.
You know, we touched on it just a little bit a few moments ago, but as we talk with Rich Branham, who's the author of What Are the Odds? And by the way, as you hear these remarkable stories, you very understandably might want to obtain a copy of the book. We'll let you know how to do that in just a few moments. But this is a little bit different of a take on somewhat of the same question, but I'm interested to hear what you'd say to this as well. It doesn't seem at all like too extreme of a statement to say that God has really surrounded you with protection. in your life. So how does it shape your faith to realize that God is so real, so active in your life, and to be reminded of that time after time?
My favorite Bible verse forever has been Psalm 97. It says, "The Lord reigns, let the earth be glad, let the distant shores rejoice. Clouds and thick darkness surround him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne."
Yes.
"Fire goes before him and consumes his foes on every side. His lightning lights up the world. The earth sees and trembles. The mountains melt like wax before the Lord of all the earth. The heavens proclaim his righteousness, and all the peoples will see his glory." So as I'm going through life and thinking about that Bible verse, the mountains melt like wax before the Lord. There's nothing that can happen that the Lord can't take care of. And so I'm just one guy trying to do my part, trying to help out and trying to be part of the community. And if that means helping a guy that just popped over a bridge and almost killed me in his truck, that's what that means. If that means a lady driving through our house and almost was decapitated and I need to help her somehow, I'm going to help with that too.
I thought of it almost in a different way, too, as you were expressing it that way. So many of us talk about situations in life where we could look back, and if we could see from God's perspective, we could see how he was protecting us. Mm. And you're someone who actually physically has been able to behold that in real life.
Right. I've been put in a lot of different odd circumstances, and I just do what I need to do.
Right. Was it tough to translate stories like these into the words on a page to put together a book? I know you're someone who really tells good stories verbally. Was it difficult to do it this way, or was it pretty natural?
It was pretty natural. There were a number of years ago, as some of these stories started to happen, my wife and I, Lana and I, started to put them down on paper and little reminders about each of the stories as they were going on. And it got to the point where we said, we probably've got a book here. And so I decided to write a book for my grandchildren. We have three grandchildren. I decided to write a book so that when they get older, they can find out a little bit about what Lana and I've experienced and a little bit about our faith and a little bit about how God has been gone before us, protecting us.
With all the things that we've talked about today, and there are many more stories than the book, I just selected some of the ones that struck me to talk with you about today, but what would you say is the weirdest thing that's ever happened to you, if you could narrow it down?
The strangest thing I would have to say is my trip down to Haiti. I've been on a couple of missions trips down to Haiti. One of the times down there, we were in City Soleil, and we were helping deliver water to the poorest of the poor. It's the poorest city in the world. And the water that we deliver that they drink is not healthy, is not good for Americans or Westerners to drink because our water is so filtered even out of the river. And that water is chemicalized a little bit, but not nearly enough. And I got a couple of drops of water. Short story, I got a couple of drops of water on my lip and accidentally licked my lip. And 12 hours from that point, I was laying on the floor, unconscious. The water had made me unbelievably sick. And I laid in and out of consciousness for about 3 hours on the bathroom floor in the middle of the night, crying out to God that I was not ready to die. I know that he has got a bigger plan for me, and that was not my time to die, and I wanted to get back home, and I wanted to be a husband. I wanted to be a dad and a grandpa, and please just take care of it and get me out of this situation. And honest to goodness, just a couple of minutes later, a gentleman that I was on the mission trip with came out and said, "Hey, Richard, just woke up. I thought something was wrong. Can I help you? Are you feeling okay?" It was answered prayer that Peter came walking down the hallway to me. And like I said, it's a long story. I ended up in the hospital in Miami, and there were all sorts of things that happened. But I described those in the book. But ultimately, that was laying on the floor, crying out to God. I had prayed. I've had a strong prayer life my whole life, but I realized what it was really about, needing God, really crying out and saying, "Boy, I have nothing. I have nothing to offer. I need your help."
Seeing that answered prayer, that answered communication prayer. From him, that had to be incredibly powerful for you.
It was very powerful.
Well, it's an amazing book. The book, once again, is called What Are the Odds? The author, Rich Branham, has joined us today on the road for Faith Radio. So we've teased people long enough. How can they go out there and get a copy of What Are the Odds?
Created a website, richbranham.com. RICHBRAN as in Nancy, HAM as in Mary.com. And there you can either download a version for your Nook or your Kindle, or you can actually buy a hard copy.
This is a challenging question, and so definitely answer it any way you'd like to. But as we say farewell, I wonder if there was only one message that you would like to leave people with when they put down what are the odds after having read your story, because we forget so many things in this day and age of stimuli everywhere we look. But if there was one message that you could leave people with, what would that be?
I've got two.
Two is good.
Number one is write a book. It's been one of the most wonderful, joyous, fulfilling things that I've ever done in my entire life. Write stuff down, if not for you, for your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids. So that's one. Number two is, if you're a person of faith, know that God goes before you. God goes before you regardless, and it's just been a great reminder to me as I've been putting down these stories that, looking back, going, God was protecting me in all of these things.
Yeah.
And if the serious and big things I'm being protected, and then I think about the little things in the day-to-day life where I'm being protected, I really don't have anything to worry about. God's taking care of the situation for me.
It couldn't be much of a better note to end on. Rich Branham has been with us. Once again, the book is called What Are the Odds? His website is richbranham.com. Sir, it's been a pleasure having you with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.